And we are back. Welcome to another edition of the Daily Dots. You got a lovely hiccup right in the middle of your opening salvo there. That's a humility reminder, you know? Another interesting day. Before we get into it, let's go a little rundown of the indexes here, Chase. Where are we at? I forgot to hold on. I've got to announce you. This is like, you know, we are obviously being joined once again by the Brain Trust, Mr. Chase Taylor. So Chase, now that I've introduced you properly, give us the rundown.
Yeah, so we've got about 4 minutes before the close, but S&P down 0.71%. The Qs are down 0.85%. Small caps down 1.75%. 1.75%. At one point today, I think Mag 7 was down like 3 or 4%, and now it's down less than 1%, 0.9%. That's kind of
an interesting
comeback.
What rallied on it? Was it Tesla?
Let's look.
Because Tesla was down like 6.5% at the low. That had to be a big part.
And it's still down almost 5%, but Meta's green and it wasn't. Google's down less than 0.5%. Apple's been stuck at negative 0.6 all day. Amazon very strong though, barely down. So most of them just kind of flattened out, even though Tesla stayed pretty red.
How'd Google finish on the day?
It is down 0.4%.
Which, man, no matter how it looks close out, yeah, that short, like we were talking about at our investment meeting, that short Apple long Google trade has been, I mean, I'm sure there's days where it hasn't been, but boy, they've been few and far between. That's been a beautiful little trade.
Yeah, it's something I don't think people have talked about much yet is the luster that has come off of AI just in the last like 2-3 weeks. And I think you kind of see that there where, I mean, Google got hit because of all the AI hype and everyone was like, oh, well, they're behind on that. Well, as people kind of care a little less about AI, all of a sudden Google's just on, you know, on a really nice run. It's just kind of funny how that works.
Well, I mean, I take all the losses on the chin. So I might as well be able to talk about some of the victories. And you were a part of that as well. But I remember our feeling was, look, every time Google gets slammed at this valuation, we're going to pick up more because it makes absolutely zero sense that these things have run and it hasn't.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense.
I was just gonna go finish up. Dollar down about almost 0.2. So it got up to that 10. It got over 105 overnight and then got hit back to 104.78 during the day. But despite that, you still the 2-year yield was down, but then you still have 10-year, 30-year yields up about 4 basis points. Oil up another 1.7%, gold up another 1.8%, and even maybe more notably in the metal space, silver up over 4% today. Pretty big move there.
Where'd it close? Where'd it close?
Let me go back and look. I was just looking at SLV.
I mean, because 25 is the line on that thing, isn't it?
26.20 is where we're at. 4.5% on silver futures. And it's,
you know,
it's a massive line that it's breaking away from on the chart.
Look. This is not investment advice, okay? I'm just going to say that but if you want to talk about, and we've talked about this and I've said it before, but if you were to sit down and ask me a year ago, when you think metals, when you think the inflation trade is really starting to happen, when you think the metals are breaking out, how do you think that would play out? And what I would have said was, I think gold would break out strong at first. I think silver would lag behind, and then silver would start coming on like a beast.
Yeah, one day.
No, it's only one day.
Sure happened today.
But here's the other one. When I'm watching gold go up like this every day, regardless of which direction the dollar's going, you have to pay attention, especially when the fact that every single day it's hitting new all-time highs.
Yeah.
Right? This to me feels like the train is leaving the station.
Yeah, and the one of the things that makes you kind of believe in it most is like not many people got on the train. Like even like gold bugs, like gold people,
yeah,
haven't seemed that in love with it. Which now positioning, like
I can tell you why.
You look at the positioning data, like plenty of people have bought, but it's nothing crazy.
Yeah, no, I can tell you why. It's was it 12 to 13
decade
years
of pain,
just getting shredded.
Yeah, I mean. So gold's hitting all-time highs, and GDX is still like 15 train stops away from an all-time high. So,
and again, that's the only part to me about this that isn't textbook, because usually I'd expect the miners to break out first. But in a market that is so dominated by tech, like you and I have talked about, factor trading, all that. Not to mention crypto. It does not surprise me at all that the metals moving before the miners have. I'm not going to sit there and say that I think all lights are green. I'm not really going to believe the breakout until I see GDX above 38 is the level that we were kind of targeting. Wasn't it 36, 38, somewhere in there?
Yeah, 36 is a big one.
Yeah. The other thing too, guys, is I'll just tell you this, and I've mentioned this before. This isn't just a stock rally story. When you look at where gold is right now and you look at where oil is, you're going to see, now not everybody, but you're going to see the earnings from a lot of these companies that back this up. You know, they're going to be selling bullion for 10 to 15% more than they were this time last year.
Yeah.
And their cost structure really hasn't changed much.
Probably in that time, probably 3-4%.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate, but it's still, I mean, nothing compared to what you're getting on the price.
No.
So our good buddy Jason, he posted something good today. It showed from the 2023 high, gold is up 10% and gold miners are down 10% from their 2023 high. So it shows you like there's a 20% delta right there on a makeup trade that could still happen.
But like I said, I think that you can see that, you can see setups like that all over this market, not just in gold. And again, that just makes sense to me because this market for a few years now has been just a one trade market, right? Like tech and AI.
Yep.
You know, and yeah, that
all of a sudden this last 2-3 weeks, commodities
setup looks legit.
Commodities, you know, kind of writ large are kind of starting to elbow out some of that, which, you know, I think people think about rotations between different sectors, and it's like not like a zero sum game where it has to like one has to like really hurt the other. But I think when you look at things like energy, like it kind of does actually almost have to hurt the other ones, because when consumers pay more at the pump, like they're going to pay more less for other things, I guess. So whether that's just pure margin thief, like I've talked about before, or just no kidding sales, like it almost has to take away from other things. So as commodities keep creeping up here and bond yields creep up here, like it just becomes pretty tough for the things that have done great over the last 6 months to keep doing great. And a lot of those things already look heavy.
Yeah, no, it's the way this thing is shaping up is really intriguing. Like I said, especially the silver one, I've been through enough of these commodity bulls, to where I've seen it. Like everybody gets on the gold train and forgets about the silver train. And typically if what we're looking at is it gets confirmed and we're in a commodities bull market. Now there's different dynamics and it's always changing this, but I would expect actually silver miners and silver probably to outperform gold if we're in what we're in.
Yeah. So I just did the Mining Stock Daily podcast last week, and Trevor, he was saying like, off air, he was telling me like he really thinks silver miners are just painfully cheap here. So,
well, it's just the way, I mean, you go back and look at the different cycles. It's just the way it always works, right? Gold is the first one out of the cave, and then it gets all the love, and then everybody's sitting there going, what's wrong with silver? And then all of a sudden it breaks out and just goes just beast charge.
Yeah. I'll never forget when I thought I was Paul Tudor Jones back in 2010, 2011, and it was all silver. I mean, I rode that baby up, and I thought I was God's gift to trading.
Did you make some good money on it?
I did until I gave it back, riding it all the way back down.
Oh yeah.
With all of the like psychological fallacies of trading that you could have, I went through all of them. It was like a textbook.
We lucked out. Did I tell you the story on that one?
Yeah.
So I mean, I was long as all, you know, we made great money out of 08, 09, going into 11. And I remember what got me a little bit concerned was at the height of every, and just keep this in mind for all you listeners. At the height of every bull market, one of the ways you can historically tell you're getting close to the end is when you see these garbage properties getting recycled. And if you've known the industry, you see them and you're like, wait a second, I remember that thing. They couldn't get anything out of that 15 years ago, right? But now it's getting, whenever you see that, it's always a good idea to pull back. So we saw a couple of those things happen in late 10, 11, and we pulled back almost all of it, thinking that we'd get another entrance. and we just didn't. And so it looks like we rode it up and exited at the perfect timing, which we did. But if I'm being honest, it was sort of by default.
Yeah.
It was kind of like how I made, what was I, up 23% or something during 08, 09. And, you know, I mean, that looks good. But how'd you do it? I thought there were issues, couldn't figure out a way to short housing. And so I just stuck it in treasuries, right? Just thinking I'll ride this out and collect my 5%. Well, during the liquidity crisis, treasuries went ballistic. And so, again, it was one of those scenarios where you did it for the right reasons. But if I'm fully being honest with you, I don't think at that time I really realized I could make 20% plus in right. treasuries.
As one does, yeah.
Yeah, like it was one of those things where it was like at the end of it, you're like, yeah, I had that all figured out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but no, it does. This is ringing all the familiar bells. And I think the thing that is the most exciting to me is watching it move on days where rates are up and dollars up. I mean, you haven't seen gold respond like that.
Right.
In a long time.
There's going to be I feel a test coming soon where there's going to be it's going to have a nasty give back day.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward to that test because that's the one that's going to freak some people out. It can change the narrative, and this could age terribly, but I think it's gonna be a good opportunity to grab some more.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be,
it could be tomorrow. If Jay Powell comes out with a hawkish speech,
it could be. But the piece of advice again, this is not a recommendation to buy it, but if you can learn one thing from me, and I know Chase will echo this sentiment as well, manage the risk. And one of the beautiful opportunities you have here with both gold and silver is rather than spending all the time, like every schmuck sitting in front of his pod shop or sitting in front of his trading account at home, don't think like them. Don't sit there and think about how high you think it's going to go, right? It's going to do what it's going to do. Take advantage of these levels you've got right below you that are perfect levels to manage your risk. Meaning, you know, pick your level. I'm not giving you trading advice, but you've got both silver and gold breaking through significant resistance levels that have mattered for a really long time. Those are great places to throw stop losses or to put a put or something, you know, something of that nature, right? And I just think that's why we love setups like this. It's funny the way we look at them. We talk about it all the time. One of our favorite things to do is to look at a setup where it's not so much where we think it can go, but where we know that the point to get out of it is really close below us.
Exactly.
Because it means you can take a big swing without risking much capital.
Yep.
And you've got that set up in gold and silver right now. Don't be dumb about it, right? Use those levels. And, you know, if this market hasn't taught you anything over the last 3 years, it should be that it can do anything it wants.
If your risk-reward ratio is high, you can afford to get stopped out tons.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. And it's not fun getting chopped up, but if you're not really taking any losses, you know, that's the key. And you and I have talked about this too. You know, it's really not just marketing on our part, but this game gets so much easier when you don't take big hits.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's everything. It's all that matters. Like Soros always told Druckenmiller, like what matters is how much you make when you win and how much you lose when you don't.
Yeah. Like as painful as last year was for us, you know, you're running a fund and I was slightly negative on a year where the market was up 20%+. What made it tolerable is we didn't get drilled the year before.
Yeah. 100%.
Right? It's not fun. I mean, it was a miserable flipping year. Flipping. That's not bad. I was caught my, well, this is also just
popular. I think Disney would let that run.
Yeah. Flipping. Yeah. But, no, it's avoid the losses, man. Warren Buffett's first three rules of trading. Number one, don't lose. Number two and three is see rule number one. Okay, what other interesting stuff? Did VIX finish red on the day?
No, not red, but like it faded a lot from where it got to. So I was watching VXX, the ETF, and
well, you had to get the last hour rally.
Yeah, it was up like 6%, I think, at one point, and the last I saw it was like 2 and change. So it came back a good bit as stocks had a decent rally going in. Uranium was kind of notable to me because it was down a decent amount at one point. Next thing you knew, it was up like over 1%.
It finished up over one.
Yeah, the candle on uranium miners was pretty significant to me.
So that's probably what flipped us positive. We were hanging around kind of by
it was even a big,
on the day.
Yeah, it was a big part of us.
Yeah.
Kind of picking back up.
Yeah, because I checked it like 15 minutes before the close, and I was like, we're positive?
Yeah, 1.44% was a close up on on URNM.
Wow.
And
the other
oil
thing,
up over two. So
the other thing you're starting to see, Chase, and you might be able to elaborate on this more than I can, but you're kind of getting back to that old phase of completely disregarding any action you see in the first half hour.
Yeah, I'm trying so hard to ignore like the first hour of the day lately.
And the reason why, guys, you can just go look at today. I've actually been seeing it flip around in the first 10 minutes sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. Yep.
Right? Like it's like you've and I think what's happened is you've got so much muscle memory built in to flows going into certain things, and the market actually opens, and you know, I don't know, new flows being driven by different invest. You know what I'm saying? I think it's got to be some kind of anomaly like that that's creating that I don't know. I don't know what's creating that bifurcation. All I do know is that whenever we've noticed this kind of thing in the past, where the first 30 minutes is always sort of a liar, but it's been very, very pronounced over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. And there's been times where, you know, that the first hour of trading will be, or first half hour or whatever, like has some like signal in it for the rest of the day or at least some like directionality. And lately, like a lot of times the way it opens has nothing to do Mm-mm. with the way it, you know, shapes up even midday, much less towards the end.
If this is just an observation on my part and I could be completely off. What it feels like to me is that the opens replicate what we've seen going on for years. And then the minute the market opens, it's like everybody's like, yeah, those rules are different now. We're going to sell that and buy that. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like. You see this reversal, you know, not at all things all the time. But I think it's another thing that could be signaling that we're looking at a real shift here. And all the data would back that up. The inflation data keeps. Do we have any new data come out today?
Yeah, so we had job openings today.
That's right, jolts.
Yep. More job openings than expected. Last month was revised higher, so pretty warm data. Naturally, I look at construction openings that went up. The quits rate was flat, and the hiring rate was up, but still in a downtrend. But that's one where like next month the hires could kind of break out of the downtrend it's been in. And again, it's just like another problem for the Fed looking at that. The ratio between job openings and unemployed people, the one thing they had that was good news was that kind of ticked down but that's mostly just because we had a lot of new people becoming unemployed last month. And that was almost all young people, which is probably kind of seasonal. So
yeah. Yeah. Not taking a shot at the guy or anything. It amuses me that literally every data point that has come out since Powell was talking about the progress they've made and the ability to cut, data point has come out hot.
Yeah. Like I actually laid all that out because I looked at Waller's November speech, which kind of marked the pivot. And everything he was excited about, and it's like all of it has gone
the other direction.
the other way since. And the amount of how much they've like actually paid homage to the fact that it all reversed on them is just embarrassing. Like even today, like Daly came out and was talking about like, oh, we're still like making progress, and three cuts still seems appropriate. And it's like you're not making progress. Like that stopped in December. Like what are you talking about?
I don't. And this is the hard thing I've gotten to where we talked about how frequently the Fed talks now. And
yeah, 20 speeches this week.
Yeah, and guys, it's just that is completely unparalleled. Meaning, this is all. I mean, it's gotten worse over time, but this never used to happen. They never used to talk this much, especially when they're saying things where you're looking at Daly going, "I don't believe you're that stupid. You know that's nonsense."
Yeah,
I don't even know what they're trying to do. I mean, you're not going to jawbone. Didn't you learn that 2 years ago? You're not going to jawbone inflation lower.
If the problem is what you will do is jawbone it higher.
Yeah, 100%.
You get asset prices up and people start spending money and you get inflation again. So
that's one of the biggest things. And I hope everybody understands this, because when I'm saying this, I'm not saying I'm smart and brilliant and the Fed's stupid. What I'm saying is this seems pretty elementary at this point, which is you're in a dynamic where asset prices are going up. Inflation's going up with them. And either the Fed is just not admitting that, or they don't know it. What it looks to me like is they don't know it. And the reason I say that is I don't think Powell, if he knew that, I don't think he would have said what he said 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't have said that. Where you and I coming into this year, we're like, and I'll give you most of the credit for it, but you and I coming into this year, we're like, yeah, market rallied a lot. I expect the inflation to be pretty hot in the first quarter. And they're sitting there going, all the progress we've made. And you're going, guys, this is kind of looking like a pretty easy board at this point. Asset prices up, inflation's going with it.
Growth and inflation will both.
You're not getting both. You're not getting both. Forget about it. If you really want to camp down on inflation, you ain't doing it without the market dropping.
Exactly.
And it probably needs to drop a good chunk.
Yes. I think both it needs to go down a decent amount, and in the time it has to stay there, it has to matter. Because now everyone's so trained on like, whatever, like the market might go down for 6 months or a year, but it's going to come ripping back.
Yep.
So I think you almost need a 2 year like down market, even if it's 5-10% over 2 years, and you need flat to down like real estate prices. And anything less than that, and it's gonna be so hard to like really control inflation.
It kind of reminds me of training a puppy, right? Meaning you can say sit, stay, do all that kind of stuff, but you got to do stay long enough for the dog to give up. You know what I mean? Like they get up and start walking. Now get back down here. Right. You got to wait for him to go to sleep, right? It's like that's what you got to do to this market, because like you said, any bit of daylight, right? For instance, if you stick it, you start coming out tough. And the minute the data turns nasty in this environment and you start cutting aggressively,
Pavlov's dog with drool again.
Yeah, I would fully expect that, even if the prints look bad, even if the economic news look bad, right? And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because then the equities rally, the economic data starts looking good again.
And if you just look at it as they're fiscally trapped, so they have to be accommodative anyways, not for no other reason than to keep the treasury going, like then none of it even matters.
Well, now you
can absolutely do it.
Now you get to the Occam's razor part of the whole analysis, I think, which is I don't think they're stupid. I think they know this, and I think they're going to look for any excuse they can to cut because they know they have to. That's what it feels like to me.
Like we just talked about, the interest expense on the bullet train to $1.6 trillion by the end of the year. Like that's really all you need to know.
Yeah, and just that again, it reiterates something that we were saying coming into this year. You ain't getting back to two. Not unless you want a recession. You ain't getting back to two. If you hit two, that's a recession signal. Huge.
Two will be a result of down asset prices and then the subsequent down, you know, economy from that.
And yeah, and I think that they probably know this. And I think that, and you made this point, I don't know, at some point in the last couple of weeks. Again, the Occam's razor thing, I think it's very dangerous to assume that counterparties or people on the other side of you are stupid. I don't think they're stupid. I think they've come to the realization that they have to inflate out. You know what I mean? Like, I just think they've come to that conclusion that we've got to talk tough and do everything we can to try to keep inflation at bay. But, I think that's the story gold's telling. I think the story gold is telling is saying they can't stop.
Right, they're not serious about this.
No. And the minute...
Which is why, like, a really hawkish Powell speech, and all of a sudden, I think gold could take a, you know, a lot of financial assets could take a haircut, because they're... All of a sudden, you have to go back to, like, oh, maybe they do care about inflation.
Yeah, I don't think he's willing to do that.
And I don't think it's going to be on some offhand, like, Tuesday, Wednesday speech. If he's going to do it, if he's going to make a move, you know... Do a 180 on people. It's going to be on, you know, it's me in a bigger setting than one of these.
I just can't believe that he said what he said 2 weeks ago. I mean, if they had run that, if they'd have run that speech by me, I'd have been like, this isn't a good idea, guys. Like, this isn't a good idea. You're going to eat this, and you're going to eat this in a really short period of time. The confidence level that they have just cracks me up. But that makes me believe that it's just they're trying to get that jawboning effect. And what I mean by that, guys, and the Fed has admitted this, that one of the tools they use is just talking about things. If they can get the market to do what they want it to do and the economy to do what they want it to do just by talking and not actually taking action, they'll do that. But you're not going to jawbone this issue away. I don't see it anyway. What else are we looking at? Anything else? What do we got coming up this week? Powell's talking again on Friday.
Tomorrow, actually.
Tomorrow?
Just a bunch of more labor data. Well, obviously a bunch of Fed speeches, but mostly labor data. So we get ADP jobs tomorrow. Thursday we'll get jobless claims and job cuts, and then Friday is the big one with non-farm payrolls.
Okay. Anything else that we're noticing looking at right now? Let's talk a little bit about broader. Come on. It's not just gold, right?
No, the one that has me fired up is aluminum. There are the commodity itself, but also some aluminum miners or companies in general are just all of a sudden just blasting off. So it's just one of those little subsectors that's really interesting to me all of a sudden.
Also seeing signs, we were talking earlier about Chinese data coming out. Manufacturing's picking up there.
Yeah, their PMIs were very solid. So things are definitely picking up there.
Again, guys, remember these commodity moves you're seeing have all been with China putting up some of the weakest economic numbers we've seen in 25 years. Okay, if they come back on, if they continue this comeback, we've said it enough times, but it does just, I got to say it again, it just amazes me how in such a short period of time, everything that was deflationary is inflationary.
And let's talk about oil for a second, because in the last couple of days, we've had tons of bullish developments. Russia is going to cut production more. Ukraine just hit another refinery.
Against the Biden administration's wishes, by the way. Yes. You hear about that?
Very, very literally. So that limits both oil production and product exports.
We stand by Ukraine, but we don't want you to attack any of Russia's money.
Well, yeah, we have some fake sanctions in place for oil, but
this whole thing is a joke.
Not to mention we're not going to do anything about Venezuela, you know, being super anti-democratic after we told them they had to, or that we would take their exports away.
Like for instance, why give them all of this money when you could probably have a very similar effect by enacting real sanctions against Russian oil and that gas, right? And then
because then you'd have 9% inflation back.
Well, yeah, but then loosen up here at home and tell the guys to fill in and they'd do it in a short period of time. I mean, the elasticity with American production, I think, keeps shocking everybody. But I feel like they've proven the point that if they need to ramp production, they can do it.
Yeah, especially if they had, you know, subsidies and someone having their back for real. But
what a mess.
You add those two things, and then the Saudis, it sounds like, are talking about ramping their prices for how much they sell oil into Asia for. So a lot of bullish developments for oil. Spreads look good.
How do they do that? Just reduce production? I mean,
No, they just they have an official selling price. It's just like, no kidding, here's how much it costs. The end.
And who sets that price? OPEC?
I mean, more of the Saudis themselves than OPEC.
Well, yeah, but if they can buy at a discount to that price from U.S. producers, why wouldn't they?
Well, because some people, I mean, part of it is shipping things all the way from here versus from there. But I mean, they're the second biggest producer in the world. So if you're the second biggest producer and you can kind of make your price.
That's true.
I mean, within reason. And they don't go crazy with that OSP. Like they don't go way above, you know, the prevailing price or way below it or anything like that. But sometimes they use it as a tool to nudge prices the direction they want. And I think that might be the case here. And if Russia really does limit their production in the next quarter or two, like you could definitely get back to 100. And then I think the Saudis can start sneaking some production back online without it, you know, cratering price to $60.
What's Nat Gas doing?
Really nothing. I mean, it had a great day yesterday, a bad day today, and mostly weather stuff. Production has been hovering like kind of right about 100. So you're 5-7% off like the highs of production. So that's good to see. Like they're actually shutting in some production.
That's good. Moving
but on. Nothing to get, yeah, nothing to like get super pumped about, but we're making progress.
All right, man. So that's it. We're looking for the Powell speech, some more jobs data, and that's about all we got on the docket.
Yep.
All righty. Well, guys, hopefully you'll continue taking this trip with us. Like I mentioned before, we got a great interview that I'm excited about that's going to air this week. So if you're not a subscriber to the podcast, please do subscribe. That way all those new shows and updates come to you automatically. Again, no paywall. And share with your friends. More subscribers we get, more guests we get on. So anyway, until tomorrow, we'll see you then. You're flying. No, today's Tuesday. You're flying solo on Thursday.
So you'll fly solo tomorrow because I'll be hooking with baseball, and then I'll fly solo Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, you're going to be doing research tomorrow.
That for sure.
Market research. What time does that game start tomorrow?
Like a little after one.
Okay, yeah, the old day game. Attaboy. Well, that'll be a good time. Anyway, all right, guys. Well, I will be flying solo tomorrow, though, and Chase will have you on Thursday, and then we'll do the regular show on Friday. Like I said, hopefully you keep taking this journey with us, and we'll see you tomorrow. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.